Please listen carefully.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Heard It Here Sports Podcast. I was lucky enough to be able to record today with Patrick Arsenal, one of the guys I met at the sports business classroom this summer out in Vegas. Very smart dude, grew up a Nuggets fan, very, very knowledgeable about the Nuggets. So I thought he would be a great guy to bring on to talk the Denver Nuggets young prospects. Without further ado, I'll go ahead and get into that conversation. I did want to note the audio quality is kind of rough at parts. A lot of that is due to the fact that I am recording in a basement right by the water heater. And I believe my mom started taking a shower about an hour into the pod. So if you hear anything like that, I apologize. I tried to minimize the background noise the best I could, but there may be a little of that. And if that's ever something that's really distracting, please shoot me a message because I don't always listen through the episodes in their entirety. So I hope you all enjoy the episode. Patrick, welcome to the Heard It Here podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. We're going to be talking the Denver Nuggets today. First, tell me a little bit about how you became a Nuggets fan and sort of how you've sort of your experience as a Nuggets fan.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me here.
Of course.
I'd say first thing that really got me into the Nuggets was just starting playing basketball, you know, the YMCA stuff when I'm, you know, your first, second grade, whatever it is. And they were the local team. I'm from Colorado, and Carmelo Anthony was a big part of the team at the time. And so he was really kind of who I looked up to. I remember wanting to be 6'8" at that time, just to be like Carmelo. So that was definitely a big piece of why I liked the Nuggets, was they were an exciting team, always in the playoffs, at different times liked to run, which was really fun, and how they used the altitude to their advantage. And eventually, you know, 2009, having that Western Conference Finals appearance really was exciting for a team that's never been to, and still has never been to, an NBA Finals. Right. So that team was really a lot of fun to watch as well. And then, you know, of course, there were a few tough years in there.
Yeah.
The Brian Shaw coaching experiment. And I remember thinking Ty Lawson was going to be a hero for,
oh my God,
for Denver. And
oh, dude, don't get me started on Ty Lawson. Oh, Lord. That was – so it's kind of funny. The first team that I really got into in the NBA was I can't remember if it was the 11-12 or the 12-13 Nuggets.
Yeah,
I followed him for like
13. Was it? It was probably,
so that was, yep, yeah. So I was gonna say, yeah, I followed them for both of those years, and it was the second year they were the 3 seed in the playoffs, right? Yeah. Beat by the Warriors.
Oh man,
there was like the Andre Miller buzzer beater, right?
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. That was such an exciting Nuggets team because it was. So I mean, it was sort of, I don't want to say Spurs, but you could say it was like the Hawks, the 60 win Hawks,
yeah,
where it was just very much a cohesive team. And there was, you know, Ty Lawson was, I guess, the leading scorer, but no one would really consider him the star of the team. It was a really interesting group. George Karl was the coach, right?
Yeah, George Karl. Well, yeah, George Karl was the coach. They ended up firing him after that year.
Yeah. After winning Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
The old Dwayne Casey special.
Yep. One of my memories from that year was the game after they traded for JaVale McGee. He ends up getting this game winner off a rebound, a free throw rebound put back. And we're like, all right, JaVale McGee is here to help lead this team to, I mean, again, we're thinking Western Conference Finals at least,
yeah,
coming in as the 3 seed. But really, little did we know that was the start of the Warriors dynasty, so. Yeah. That kind of hit us in the face pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's dig into a little bit of how these Nuggets looked last season.
Yeah.
Obviously, last season was a pretty tremendous success. Obviously, they went in, missed the playoffs the year before, but that was a game at the end of the season to determine whether the Timberwolves or the Nuggets would make it. So they were a team that had legit playoff aspirations going in. It ended up finishing 54-28 last season, second in the West. Had a really tight series against the Spurs in the first round where they won in seven games and then fell in seven games to the Portland Trailblazers. Is there anything you wanted to say on their run last year? Anything notable?
Yeah, what I would say is I think, like you mentioned, missing out on the playoffs the year before, I think it propelled them to kind of have that motivation to get as high of a seed as they did, getting the two seed. But then kind of you saw the effects of kind of missing that stage in their development where they're a lower seed to start the playoffs and kind of being that underdog. They kind of skipped that step, getting that two seed. And I think you saw the effects of that in the San Antonio series going to seven. And then ultimately they were just worn out by the time, you know, that Portland series came around. And I think if, you know, with a little more experience, playoff experience before that, I don't think either of those series go to seven, but I think in the way that it worked out, in a similar way to how the Minnesota lost the year before kind of helped them have a great year the next year, I think having those tough seven-game series and even losing to Portland at home will help kind of propel them this season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of merit to that. And I think obviously the biggest reason you would say that is because this Nuggets team is so young. Yeah. And that starts with Nikola Jokic, only 24 years old. But if you look just up and down the roster, you got Jamal Murray's 22. Jeremy Grant, who they just brought in, is 25. Gary Harris is 25. Malik Beasley, 23. Monte Morris, 24, Wancho, 24, and then obviously there's the wild cards out there who are really young. But there's a lot of youth on this team, and it's not just youth, it's very productive youth.
Yeah, I mean, they've been thrown in, really asked to carry the load for this team and develop, you know, kind of with their kind of in the fire right away. Jamal Murray, especially being asked to be the point guard of this team, has definitely seen his ups and downs and struggles with consistency, but I don't think you could ask for a better player to be in that role, as competitive as Murray is. And after that Spurs game in the playoffs where he missed what would have been the game winner, he's in the practice gym at the Pepsi Center shooting, you know, for 30 minutes after the game, those shots over and over. And you saw the impact of that when he came back and really saved the Nuggets in that series with his fourth quarter heroics. I believe it was game two, probably one of those. Saving them from a possible sweep.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely. Let me just go ahead and go over. So from changes from last season to now in terms of their young core, they lost Trey Lyles in free agency. Not particularly a guy they seemed super interested in keeping. He ended up signing with the Spurs. Anything you want to say on Trey Lyles?
Yeah, Trey Lyles. Time in Denver was kind of complicated, I think, because he was attached to that Donovan Mitchell trade that really didn't go how it was supposed to. I think the Nuggets were expecting to get OG Anunoby with that pick instead of Tyler Lydon, who's also now gone. Both players left this offseason. And I don't think either of them really panned out as expected because of that, the pressure with how Donovan Mitchell was performing, particularly Trey Lyles, who had a solid first season with the Nuggets, especially in stretches where, you know, he was a 38% three-point shooter on the year and looked like he could be a piece, at least offensively, that could provide a spark. But then into his second year, really fell off and just lacked confidence completely and was down on 25% shooting on the year from three and just really was unplayable at times. So it was definitely time for him to move on and for the Nuggets to move on from him. And I think it'll probably be best for both sides in that case.
Yeah, certainly a guy who we'll see how his career goes on the Spurs. But I think talking about that mental aspect of being included in a trade for Donovan Mitchell, I think there's certainly some merit to that. In terms of the additions they made this offseason, picked up Jeremy Grant from the Thunder in a trade. I believe they just sent out, it was maybe a top 10 protected first round pick for next year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually,
yeah,
I'm concerned with those at this point.
Yeah. No. So I was actually wanted to point that out because I haven't done this on the other podcast, but I think it'd be important to look at the future picks for the Nuggets. So obviously they traded. Have they traded their last three first round picks? Sorry, they didn't trade the Michael Porter Jr. pick, but in 17 and 19. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But that though, they did start trading those to get off of salary. So that started with Kenneth Faried and Wilson Chandler, trading those picks that they had, which again, the benefit to them of being able to stay out of the tax and save money for now is what they're trying to do. And they're pretty close up against it this year. And they're already seeing some of the impacts of that as they're trying to figure out where they're going to put Bol Bol in terms of a two-way or how they're going to fill that last roster spot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll just to recap. So they have that outstanding 2020 pick. That is top 10 protected, which means that protection also goes if it does not convey this year, which very, very unlikely that pick does not convey. But in terms of trading picks out into the future, it's still relevant to note the holds that are on them. That would convey to another top 10 protected pick next year or into 2022. And if it didn't convert then, it would turn into the 2023 and 2024 Denver second round picks. And other than that, they have all of their future picks, which is certainly for a team with this much talent and this much young talent, I think that's a very good sign because you definitely will still want to be bolstering your roster 3 or 4 years from now with those young players you can bring in or making trades with them like they were able to do in this Jeremy Grant situation.
Yeah, and I don't think they're necessarily done with trades for this year even. I think Denver's a team, depending on how things are going with the rotation and where they stand in the standings, you know, around the trade deadline, you know, they could be in for another trade still or a buyout.
That's interesting.
Need to make a trade to get rid of some salary in order to bring someone in.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
We'll see where they're at that time. But.
Right. Yeah, I think obviously the biggest hole would be if there was any ability to bring in someone that could play the three, even just backup minutes. Denver would definitely be looking to make that move.
Yeah, and that's going to depend on, you know, some of those wild cards that you talked about. Michael Porter Jr., is he going to be able to stay healthy?
Yep.
And how much are they going to trust him? How much of a leash are they going to give him to kind of struggle?
Right.
One of the things that they really can't afford, like they tried to give Isaiah Thomas some time last year, and it just wasn't working out, so he became essentially just another coach on the bench by the end of the year, out of the rotation, and obviously moving on now to Washington.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and get on into it. The first guy we're going to be talking about is Nikola Jokic. He was the 41st overall pick in the 2014 draft, drafted out of Serbia. He's currently 24. He'll be 25 in February. 7 foot, 250 center. Very, very unorthodox skill set. I think that even might be underselling it somehow. It is interesting to note. I think we forget this now, but his first year, he did not come in as a barn burner. He came in as a backup to Jusuf Nurkić. It eventually played so well that the Nuggets were forced to move Nurkić, but it is, do you maybe want to talk about it a little bit? I'm sure you were around that situation more.
Yeah, I think any Nuggets fan that's, you know, followed them closely for the last few years remembers December 15th as a very important day. That was when, in 2016, that was when Jokic became the starter.
Right.
And from that point on, basically, you know, they tried to go with a Twin Towers approach to start the year with Nurkić at center and Jokic as power forward. I think they really hoped that would work out, but it just limited both guys' potential and really what they were successful at. And it didn't work out together. So then they tried, you know, Jokic was willing to come off the bench. They tried that. And like you said, Jokic just played so much better at that point that they moved Jokic to starting lineup on December 15th, Nurkić to the bench. And at that point, Nurkić basically became frustrated with the situation, got out of shape, became unplayable, and lost a lot of his trade value. And that's where you saw that Denver had to give up a first-round pick even to trade him for Mason Plumlee, which looks like a steal for Portland.
I don't know, man. Have you seen Mason Plumlee?
I know.
He can play basketball, I think.
USA, too? Here we go.
I mean, so how about this? At least they traded for that Plumlee brother. That's probably the best Plumlee brother to trade for.
I think Plumlee I mean, he's a great, you know, piece when he's really clicking for Denver. They need, you know, his ability to still have some playmaking skills and be a rim protector, which we've seen work well at times. But he's had some core injuries, which a lot of the Nuggets have had, which is really something they need to figure out. Just these random, mysterious core injuries. I think the list is like Wancho. Of course, Will Barton had more of a hip/core injury last year. Plumlee, all these guys kind of developing these things that kind of limit them towards the end of the year. So this year is make or break for Plumlee in that sense, too. Away from being, you know, he's not really part of the young core, but he is a free agent next summer and possibly someone that they might be looking to move on from, depending on how their depth works with Jeremy Grant and Bol Bol and how those guys develop.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So between him and Paul Millsap, they'll have about $44 million coming off the books. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see whether Plumlee plays to the level where the Nuggets think it's worth retaining him, or if they decide to try to make use of the space they get. I don't know if they'll really be able to create cap space.
No.
Yeah. But they would certainly be able to. So this is a team that's fighting against the tax. Really doesn't want to pay the tax. It seems to be a clear mandate from ownership. So if you could get rid of that money and then bring in a guy for the full mid-level, certainly possible that it's worth it. So I agree. Plumlee will definitely have to prove his worth this year. Let me just go over Jokic's stat line for last year. So 20 points per game, 10.8 rebounds, 7.3 assists on 3.1 turnovers a game. Also put up 1.4 steals and 0.7 blocks. He shot 30% from three on 3.4 attempts. And just so historically, I think it's worth noting that his first two seasons shot about 33% on a shot and a half from three. But 17-18, he shot almost 40% on 3.3. Attempts. So that is something we could certainly, he has shown that is a bit of a volatile skill, but I think we can certainly expect that to trend upwards from last season. Do you agree?
I agree. And I think you just have to look at the playoff stats. Although there were, you know, more opportunities, he played a lot more minutes. I mean, he did shoot 39% from three in the playoffs, averaged 25 points, 13 rebounds, almost 8.5 assists. Like, that playoff stretch for Jokic was really pretty crazy, that what he was able to accomplish after a full season, you know, 7-game series back to back, you know, putting up those numbers is pretty impressive. And
yeah. And I mean, so I want to note, his usage last season was 27.4. In the playoffs, though, his usage went down to 26.5. So it's not like he went up, you know,
right.
He started using half the possessions. He just was more efficient with them, which is really incredible. I mean, is there anything else you want to say about Jokic, just in terms of maybe where you could see him developing in the future? Anything you think he's going to continue to work on, or any new skills you could see growing from him? I think we all have a pretty good idea of the type of player Jokic is.
I think one area where you saw him trying to develop, at least in that Portland series, especially when he gets, you know, more tired and he wants to get down in the post, is his post fadeaway. And he really struggled with that in the Portland series. I think he was 0-for-9 in that series when going to a post fadeaway. And that's something where I think he can really develop in terms of a scorer. It's just working on different ways to score in the post rather than, you know, obviously he's effective, but there were times, especially in game 7, where he would just be spinning and spinning and spinning just because he was exhausted. He had nowhere to go. And then, you know, gets down to 2 seconds on a shot clock and he's going to a post fadeaway, and it just wasn't an effective area for him. And I think along the same lines as his 3-point shooting, just developing more ways to score from the post and his jump shot.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. Yeah. I think one way to say it would be working on his rather than just like his general scoring, it's like his ability to bail out a possession.
Is that clear? Yeah.
Did Jokic stay overseas for a year after he was drafted?
I believe so. Yeah, he did. Okay. When he came over, it was an interesting situation when he came over. He did start, you know, 55 games that first year, but really it was just because there was nothing else going for the Nuggets at that time.
That's just something that I wasn't aware of. That's something I noticed. Let's go ahead and move on to Jamal Murray, who I would say is clearly the number two guy in Denver right now, drafted with the number 7 overall pick in the 2016 draft. Interesting to note, though, he was actually the 71st overall recruit in his class. So I always am really interested to see guys jump up like that, even just in their freshman year. To see a one-and-done guy like that excel, very impressive. 6'4", listed at 210 per Basketball Reference, 210 pounds, 22 years old, will be 23 in February. Obviously, his calling card is a scoring. Scored 18.2 points a game last year. Did have 4.8 assists, which obviously that's low for what you're considering your point guard, but you have to you have to give merit to the fact that Jokic is the primary facilitator.
Right.
And it's also worth noting he did only have 2.1 turnovers, so not a particularly bad ratio when you look at that. Just to look at his percentages, he shot 44% from the field last year, shot about 36.7% from three on 5.5 attempts, which is pretty good volume and pretty good percentages. And that's about, so he shoots five for 36% for his career. So he's been pretty consistent with that. Free throws, he hits about 88% of them. Unfortunately, only takes 3 a game, which I think that could be, is that something you could see him maybe upping his numbers there? Because I think that would be a very clear way for him to get a lot more points.
Yeah, I think if he can get to the line more, I think that would be great. I do think he should be, his shooting percentages were a lot lower than I think they should be this past year.
Okay.
I think he should hover closer to 90 from the free throw line anyway. So getting to the line more is obviously something that he should try to do. I think one of the problems for him in terms of doing that is Gary Harris fits more of that driver slasher role where he's going to be at the rim a lot more, whereas Murray is more prone to pull up from mid-range and I think is going to be asked even more to pull up from three. So I don't know if he's going to be asked a lot to be attacking the basket necessarily as much as he is going to be asked to improve his efficiency shooting off the dribble.
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you have anything else?
No, that was all.
Okay. Yeah, so also worth noting, he had a 25% usage last year. I'm imagining that's second highest on the team. But again, for a guy who's a heavy scoring guard, it's not astronomical by any means. Let's talk about how he fits, number one, beside Nikola Jokic. But then after that, I want to dig into how the lineups where he and Monty Morris are both on the floor go. So first, let's talk about his fit with Jokic. Let's say first, how does Jokic open up the game for Jamal Murray?
Well, I think it gives Murray a lot of options for in the offense. For one, they can run their pick and roll, which is very effective, and I think they need to continue to develop. But you saw in the playoffs when they go to Murray Jokic pick and roll, it was more successful than Portland even, who was a very heavy pick and roll team with both Lillard and McCollum. So I think as much as they can develop that, that'd be really great for them to continue to work on that, as well as their dribble handoffs. They run a lot of those in the offense, and it just gives Murray a lot of opportunities to get his mid-range shots more open than he would otherwise, because there's the threat of Jokic, rolling to the basket, Jokic in the post. I'd say Gary Harris, if he continues to develop as a shooter as the third option off of those Jokic Murray looks, I think it'll help both players, Jokic and Murray, even more if he ends up shooting better.
Right.
But yeah, I think it takes some pressure off of Jamal as well. He does, like you said, he doesn't have to be the 8 assist, 10 assist point guard. He can really focus on his scoring, which is something that allows him not to worry as much about handling the ball all the time or trying to get others involved. Like, he can rely on Jokic to facilitate the offense, and hopefully that just helps him continue to develop as a scorer.
Right. Yeah. I pretty much agree with everything you said. Don't really have anything to add on that. In terms of him playing with Monty Morris, I'll go ahead and just go over Monte. So he was the 51st overall pick in the 2017 draft out of Iowa State. Which a school that's had a lot of sort of fringe draft players that have turned into solid contributors. So an interesting trend. We've also noted a guy in this year's draft, Talen Horton-Tucker, ended up going 46 overall. Mm-hmm. It was a guy that was really interesting to a lot of draft people. Monty Morris is 6'3". I got to be honest. I thought he was a little shorter than that. So 6'3" guard. Is that sound right too?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, score. So last season, his numbers, played 24 minutes a game, played all 82, 10.4 points, 3.6 assists, almost averaged a steal a game as well, and shot 2.8 threes on 41.4%, which is a very impressive clip. And also had a free throw a game at 80%. So those are good shooting splits, to be sure. That's a true shooting percentage of 57.7, which very impressive for a guy like him. How would you say the dynamic? So am I right that it looked like there was maybe like 25% of Jamal's minutes worth of shooting guard position last year? Am I right that saying, obviously some of that was with Isaiah Thomas, but there was a decent number of Monte Morris, Jamal Murray minutes? Was that something you had a good sample of?
Yeah, there's certainly times that they'd like to take Jamal off ball and really give him the opportunity to spot up as a shooter, or even have Monte off ball. He was really successful as a corner three-point shooter, I believe, last year. I'd have to check on that. But either one of those, they do like to play, with their guards off on and off the ball and have that versatility. And even play some of their guards like Malik Beasley at the three. But yeah, I don't necessarily know if that's, a big piece of this team going forward in terms of the success of those two together as much as it'll be, how Monte can keep the offense going when Jokic and Murray are off the floor.
Okay.
But, it's nice to have, especially there were times I would say when, Jamal would really be pressured on ball and would fall into some bad decisions, and that's when you would see Monte try to come in and kind of stabilize the offense. His assist to turnover ratio is crazy, one of the best in the league. I believe he's finished second in that category, but they like him as a steady hand that can really not turn the ball over and just be a point guard, especially for the second unit.
Yeah, so a couple of those numbers, his corner three-point percentage was 45% last year. So, yeah, very impressive.
Yeah.
He had a 21.7 assist percentage and a 6.6 turnover percentage, which is just minuscule for a guy that's handling the ball as much as he is. I mean, that's a great number for, like, a big.
Right.
that's just unheard of. Like, I'm pretty sure I average, like, a turnover a game watching the game. It's like fictional numbers. It's incredible. So that's right. So I think you're probably right in that Monty Morris isn't someone you project as a starter in the future in like, the ideal circumstance of this Nuggets team. Because I think his main benefit is probably how efficient he is. But I do really like the idea of bringing him in and, being able to, as you said, take pressure off of Jamal Murray, but also allow Murray to play on ball or off ball, just sort of depending how his game's going.
Right.
Because he is a guy that's shown some inconsistency. So if you can sort of fill the other positions in depending on how Jamal is playing, I think that offers a lot of flexibility for the Nuggets.
Yeah, and in terms of the playoffs last year, he finished 0-13 from three. So he, as good as he was during the regular season, he was one of the ones that really got hit by the difference of play in the playoffs and really struggled, and was part of the reason why Jokic was playing so much is that the second unit of Morris and Plumlee, which was fantastic during the regular season. I mean, it was losing leads and building deficits left and right in the playoffs. And I think that was just the case of it was really his first experience in that. And I think his steady hand and consistency will will definitely come back in the playoffs next year.
Yeah. Yeah, just to put a couple numbers to that. So last year in the playoffs, as you said, missed all of his threes, but also shot almost a free throw a game and hit 70%, which
that's free throws. It was ridiculous. I think they missed a free throw on 30% of the trips to the line. Like they missed at least one free throw.
That's probably like you said, that's just an inexperienced thing. That's just feeling the pressure thing. But a couple other numbers. So that his true shooting in the playoffs adds up as 41%. So that's 17% lower than in the regular season. And he did play. So he played 224 playoff minutes, 16 minutes a game. That was 8 or 10 less than he played in the regular season, but still played a significant number of minutes. He did keep that turnover percentage down to 6.1 though. So
yeah. I mean, that's one thing you can count on with Monte.
Right. He's not going to throw the ball away. Okay. That was good. Let's go ahead and move on to the, I guess he's not the third guard, but the other guard that is a major part of the Nuggets' future. And that's not true. I guess we've got two more, don't we? But the big name, I guess, would be the big contract would be Gary Harris.
Yeah.
Which I should, you know what, if I'm going to say contract, Gary Harris is on a pretty good contract. We don't have to talk about that as much, but you know, it is a good deal. And actually, you know what, let's just segue. Let's talk for like 30 seconds about how Jokic, Murray, and Harris are all locked up. Do you see that as being something that allows the team to be more confident in their team building, knowing that they have those guys locked up at a young age?
Yeah, they always talk about in the front office not skipping steps, and they've stayed consistent with all three of these guys. They've offered them their extension a year early for all three. They've locked them up, made sure that they know they're the core together. I know there were a lot of, trade rumors involving Bradley Beal, where Gary Harris and other pieces are involved in those rumors. But I think as long as Gary Harris gets back to what he was the year before, I mean, there's no reason to believe that this core three isn't exactly what the Nuggets want and think they need to be able to contend.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So let's go over Gary Harris's numbers. One thing that just really jumped out to me, I don't think I realized this, but so over the course of his career, he came into the league. I'll give his background first. So he's 24, he'll be 25 in September, 19th pick in the 2014 draft. So same year as Jokic, but Jokic came over a year later. So over his 5 years, he's played 55 games, 76 games, 57, 67, and then 57 last year.
Yeah.
I would assume that's injury related, right?
It is, yeah. Especially the after his rookie year. His rookie year was really just he wasn't at all what he is now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely worth noting too. Yeah.
Ever since then it's been injury related. And last year he never really got right after the injury. I think it was a rhythm thing mostly. He never had a chance to really get back into it. And that carried over to the playoffs where he struggled just as much as Monte even in terms of shooting the ball.
Right. Yeah, so as far as his numbers, last season, as you said, not nearly as good as the season before, or even two seasons before, really. Put up 12.9 points, 2.2 assists, about 3 rebounds. But his shooting splits are the most important thing with a guy like him. He shot 33.9% from 3 on 4.2 attempts, which is dramatically lower than he had the last two seasons. So last year, shot 39.6% on almost 6 attempts a game. And 2 years ago, shot 42% on 4.5 attempts. So a pretty drastic thing. And are you? So it sounds like you're saying, is that one of the things you think especially could be injury related?
Definitely. I think in terms of the shooting this year, seeing that decline, I just think he started out the year pretty well. Shooting the ball, and then after his injury, it was especially from the left corner. He couldn't hit a shot, and it didn't matter if it's uncontested or in rhythm, whatever it was. He just didn't have it. I think that's something that should come back, but it's that's really the big question is what is the shooting going to look like? And
yeah,
so we'll see.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is you brought up shooting from the left. I don't have the left versus right, but as far as just corner 3-point field goals, again, 2 years ago, that was his most efficient shooting season. Shot 55.7% from the corner.
Yeah, that's
that was like 24% of his 3-point attempts, so a significant portion. Last year, 41.5% from the corner, and the season before passed.
Yep.
And then in 18-19, shot 37.1% from the corner, which is it's pretty low for a corner 3-point shooter.
Yeah, you definitely want him to be over 40% at least, especially for a guy that's getting as many good looks. You know, between Jokic and Murray kind of running in the middle of the floor, you'd like to see him convert on 40 to 45% at least.
Right. Sorry, did you have anything?
No, I don't know if you want to continue talking about his offense, but for him especially, he's really key defensively. I know in the first series, being able to put him on Derek White, of all people, was the key to really turning that series around as well, because they were just attacking Jamal over and over and over. And just having a second guard like Gary to play, you know, defensively is pretty key. He's not, you know, 6'4", he doesn't have the size to go up against some of the bigger guards or some threes even, which is where Torrey Craig comes into play. But between Craig and Harris, they have a duo that can defend guards.
Right.
And well enough.
That's USC Upstate graduate Torrey Craig. Shout out Spartan. Yes. Let's go. I'm doing my master's program at USC Upstate, actually. That's why I mentioned that. It is very I'm glad you noted that, because that's what I wanted to move into next was his defense. That's obviously probably so I think it's pretty clear on this team what you want him to be is your third or more ideally probably your fourth offensive option, who his primary goal is to shoot, but it sounds like you're saying he's given a decent number of drives to the basket as well. Is that right?
Yeah, his ability when healthy to back cut and get those looks really valuable. I think that's what they wanted if, you know, they ended up getting OG and Anobi as well, as someone like that that can be a 3-and-D and back cut type of guy.
Yeah,
that's what they want from Harris. And, you know, I mean, you've seen the top play where he's going and does the reverse and is hanging through the air behind the basket. Like, that's really those finishes that he can really be successful at as well, going backdoor. But.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, as you said, you mentioned OG a couple of times. It would be really nice to have a guy that you can count on to defend threes. Harris probably isn't doing that, but he is certainly strong as a shooting guard. He's got,
it's
fair to say, he's almost got like the Eric Gordon body. He's definitely like, he's 6'4", he's a strong guy, so he will hold up against guys at his position. Is it fair to say he guards both guard spots pretty well as well?
They like to keep him mostly on two guards, but because of Torrey Craig's ability to guard certain point guards, like they love to put Torrey Craig on Westbrook or someone like that. I am interested this year to see, you know, Torrey Craig's minutes as Will Barton gets healthy. They try and implement MPJ. Maybe Wancho gets into the mix a little bit more. We'll see what they do, especially, you know, when it comes to the playoffs. I mean, Torrey Craig got the starting spot because they needed his defense.
Right.
And that becomes interesting when it comes to the rotation. But yes, so back to Harris, they do.
Hey, if Torrey Craig can shoot 5 for 7 from 3 every game, he'll probably keep playing.
It's true. And we'll see. We'll see if he can.
Probably not. But
he was on a bit of a hot streak for a while. But
sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just getting back to Harris. They do mostly like to have him on two guards. And Derek White was maybe an exception just because of how that series was, and they were trying to stick with Barton in the starting lineup. But
anything else you want to add on Harris? Anything I guess, again, anything you see him adding to his game that could be particularly important? I guess the point guard defense would be something you could point at.
Yeah, I'd say point guard defense. And I think what you were alluding to earlier with Monte Morris, having a guy next to Jamal who can work off the dribble, that was something he started to really show before his injury as well. But being able to be that guy who can handle the ball in the half court and drive off the dribble as well, that'll be something that I think we'll start to see from him this year. And if we don't, I think it'll be because Barton has returned to the level where he was at his peak, or MPJ is this what everyone is hyping him up to be. Like, it would have to take best case scenarios almost from Barton and MPJ for Harris not to develop as that driver on ball as well.
Right.
Where he can just be in the corner and be a 3-and-D guy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, another sort of important note of this Nuggets team is that's sort of the beauty of having all this depth, is generally you aren't going to fall backwards into a guy starting. Somebody's going to earn the minutes.
Yeah.
One way or another. It's not the minutes. There are no minutes to be gifted. There's a reason Isaiah Thomas was excised from the rotation so quickly last year.
Yep.
They had to get other guys in because the other guys are too good to just wait and see on a guy. And that's, so we'll talk about Michael Porter Jr. later. That could be something that comes up with him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So
there's no time to be like, oh, you know, you're not really performing for us right now, but we'll give you time because we can afford to lose it. No, there's the Nuggets need to get the one seed, really. I mean, if they want to win a series against like the Clippers or the Lakers, even, like, having that home court advantage, especially if they can find ways to be effective at using it to their advantage, like,
right,
that, like the teams they've had in the past, like, mm-hmm, that is something that is their best chance to get to the finals this year.
Yeah, it's something you always hear with Denver, but yeah, the home court advantage, the altitude is a huge thing. Obviously, it affects both sides. It's not like the Nuggets guys breathe air better.
No, it's not like they're immune to it.
Yeah, but there's certainly, you know, there's some, you know, merit to getting used to that. You're just more used to being tired if you're playing in that environment. Let's go ahead and move on. So the last two guys I want to hit, aside from the wild cards, will be Malik Beasley. Malik is 22, going to be 23 in December. In November. 6'5" shooting guard, drafted out of Florida State in 2016 with the 19th overall pick. Not a guy I'm as familiar with. He's certainly, it wasn't really in the rotation until last year. 23 points per game last year, and it ended up, sorry, not points per game. Good Lord.
that would be something.
Yeah. If he probably wouldn't be playing 23.2 minutes a game if he put up 23.2 points a game. but he did. He played 23.2 minutes per game last year, and actually started 18 games. Yep. I'm assuming that was in Harris and Barton's absences.
Correct.
But played all 81. Do you want to go ahead and just sort of give an overview of what type of player he is and where his strengths and weaknesses lie?
Yeah, he's someone who has a lot of energy and really can be that piece, I think, for Denver that gets out and runs. I'm really interested to see actually him and Murray together a lot of the time, to see if they can be that unit that really pushes the pace on some of the teams. To use that altitude to their advantage. He's a high flyer who loves to dunk on people. Three-point shooting, one of his better skills. He was up above 40% this last year. Defense, I think he can become a good defender. He just gets lost too often, I think, still at this point. So that's just an area where he'll continue to develop. Like you said, he's only going to be 23, so he has time. And I think a lot of people around the league view him as, if you can get him away from Denver, he's a potential starter in the future on some teams. And I know there's some that would even say, you know, maybe he can take over Gary Harris's spot if things don't go right for Harris. But this is a big year for Malik as well. It's contract year. He's one that hasn't been resolved yet, and I think it's really going to depend on, you know, where they go, what trades they make, if any. But he's someone that's developed each and every year. He started as a summer league guy. He was a third year summer league guy, I believe. And that third year was really where he made an impact and showed that he could be trusted to be in the rotation. And he carried that over to the season perfectly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll talk a little bit of his stats. These are much better numbers than I was expecting, especially in terms of efficiency. So 11.3 points per game last year. I want to note first, his first season, he played 165 total minutes. Second season, 583. And then this past season, played 1,800 minutes. So he was, when I say he was not part of the rotation, like he was really not part of the rotation, at least his first year. So back to his stat line from last year, 11.3 points, 2.5 rebounds, 1.2 assists. But what really caught my eye is 5 attempts from 3 per game, 40%. I was not aware that he's a 40% heavy volume 3-point shooter. Usually when you hear like 3 and D guy, when the guy's 22 years old, that means, oh, so he shoots like 3 attempts a game and makes 36 of them, 36%. You don't see those sort of numbers. 40% on 5 a game is incredible.
Yeah, and that's something along with Morris. I mean, the two of those together, there's a big reason why Denver was able to play that second unit so much in the regular season. Problem was, in the playoffs, a lot of those uncontested shots that they were still getting, they just didn't convert. Morris, I think, in the Portland series was 28% on uncontested shots. Malik Beasley was 27%. Both of those guys were up above 40% during the regular season. So they really both saw a big drop off in terms of shooting the ball in the postseason. And back to, you know, Beasley's offensive game, there were, what is it? 12 games last season where he was over 20, where he scored over 20 points. And that's, I mean, that's where a lot of people see his potential as a starter, with some of these games that, you know, he got over 30 minutes. And he has, like you said, he has the shooting efficiency potential and, you know, the ability to just put up numbers. His season high was 35 points against
So you actually, I was literally about to try to transition into that. So I'm glad you brought it up. Let me go ahead and steal it from you and say, I wanted to like ask you specifically about the game. So it was against the Houston Rockets about in February of last season, February 1st. And let me just read off his stat line. And then I want you to just sort of tell me about what the game was like watching it. 35 points, 12 of 17 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. So only missed 1 2-pointer, 6 of 7 from the line. I mean, that's incredible. 41 minutes. That's amazing scoring, but so efficiently. Because usually when you see young guys score like that, it's, you know, I don't want to single him out, but it's in a case like Devin Booker where he's, you know, got 50 games during the year where he's putting up over 30 shots.
So if he's not being doubled, that, right? And he's not being doubled, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. God damn it. I didn't realize the joke you were getting at until now. Oh, that was like the worst thing. That was worse than the Popeye sandwich. Oh my God. I'm going to be a grumpy old Twitter man, I think. I think that's just my role. I'm going to tell all these kids to get off my damn lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just tell me a little bit about, I assume you watched that game, and tell me about just what really stood out to you.
Well, I'll tell you, Denver really struggles against Houston for the most part. So, I mean, you can, even in that game, the first quarter, I'm looking back at the quarter by quarter here. The Nuggets were down 43-35 after the first quarter.
43 points in the first quarter.
Yeah, obviously it's 43 Houston in the first quarter. And Denver barely, you know, kept up with 35. But I think Beasley really took over in the second quarter. Denver won that quarter by 20. It was 48-28. I mean, there was no defense in the first half of that game at all.
Wow.
Like you said, the Nuggets have the flexibility where if a guy like Malik Beasley takes over in a second quarter, they can roll with him the rest of the game if they have to. I mean, it could be anybody. So that's really one of my takeaways, especially as a regular season team. Denver has the flexibility to roll with the hot hand because of their depth.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very important to note. Also, the last stat I'm going to mention from that game, his usage was 25.5% in that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's more of your can he be a starter potential, you know?
Right, yeah.
Torrey Craig had 22 points in that game. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, you expect that from Torrey Craig. I mean,
right, I mean.
Another 22 points, obviously. Duh. All right, so last guy before we get into the wild cards. Is there even anything you want to say on Juancho Hernangómez? A guy that, so I assume you do too, but I listen to a ton of Dunked On. You know, I've been listening pretty much every day for 2 or 3 years now. Yeah. And he was a favorite of theirs, even his rookie season, but just hasn't really cracked the rotation. 13.6 minutes a game his first year, 11.1 his second year, 19.4 his third year. And I know he had some, I believe he was, had like, he was really sick last year, but
yep,
there's just not really been a point at which he's been able to break into the rotation consistently for a good stretch.
Yeah, I think it's all dependent on health. Like you said, he had mono for a little while, which really derailed, I believe that was his 2017-18 season.
Right.
And last year he was one of the guys that had a core injury. So and that was after he started.
He started, I guess,
at the beginning of the year, had a key block against the Warriors that really, I think, led to the Warriors beating up on the Nuggets the rest of the year. It would be like the Nuggets would be sneaking up on the one seed and then they'd play the Warriors and the Warriors are like, all right, we're going to try today. And they scored 50 points in the first quarter and the game was over. So
that sounds like pity KD.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, just to put a number on it, he'd started 25 games last year. So it seems very clear to me he's a guy that the Nuggets would like to play. It just hasn't quite worked out in terms of, as you've said, his availability with sickness and injury. I guess the one thing, so he is almost 24. He'll be 24 in September. He's a power forward, right? Do you see him being able to play any minutes at small forward?
He can play minutes at small forward. I just think it's about how much you're willing to give up defensively.
Right.
Which he's not terrible, but he's not someone you'd want to trust at small forward minutes for an extended period of time.
Right.
But as a shooter, if you're just looking to space the floor, like even I think it was 3 years ago at this point, the game he had against the Warriors.
I do remember that. Yep.
I mean,
the highlights of that.
That's what he can do. I mean, even in the Portland series, they put him in because, you know, he had been taken out of the rotation because of his injury and all of that. Didn't ever really get healthy, but they put him in and immediately in that game, he gets a kick out from Plumlee, hits that corner three, does a dance. Like, that's what he can be. He can be he is a fan favorite already.
Right.
But he can be that guy off the bench that just comes in and hits 3 3-pointers in a short period of time. And that's, I think that's what they want him to be. But again, it's just, where does he fit in the rotation? Especially you've got Torrey Craig, Michael Porter, Jeremy Grant's here now. All these guys that can play 3-4 and just where does he fit? That's going to be the question. And it's really performance dependent for him. Can he keep hitting shots?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and hit the last three guys on my list who I call it all these guys wild cards. All three are very they're not guys you would rely on for your team, but all guys that came in with pretty high pedigrees. The first one we're going to talk about is Jared Vanderbilt. 20 years old, which is interesting because he was drafted in 2018. So he was very young for that class. Drafted 41st overall, played high school in Texas, went to Kentucky. He was the 13th recruit in his class, ended up going 41st overall. So always interesting to note, he was a guy with more of a pedigree coming out of high school. He may have had injuries in college as well. I know he did at Denver. A power forward, 6'10", about 220 pounds. You go ahead and talk about, his sort of the injury problems he's had.
Yeah. Well, coming in the first offseason after they drafted him, he was on a scooter with a boot for the first, that entire offseason pretty much. So he didn't play summer league the first year. A G League guy, two-way guy in that opportunity, and really they had high hopes for him coming into this summer league just with his ability to handle the ball, rebound and go, be a fast break kind of initiator in that sense. And, you know, he had his ups and downs in summer league in terms of handling the ball and, you know, decision making and things like that. So he's still a work in progress. I don't think he plays much this year, regardless, especially after, you know, Jeremy Grant. There's other guys that they need to get minutes, including Wancho, who we just talked about. So right. I think he's a guy that's going to be back for another summer league next year. And right. maybe he can be like Malik Beasley in the sense that that's the year that it clicks. And, you know, if he works out, he's a guy that, you know, can be a 3, 4, or 5, you know,
right.
kind of versatility and ability to handle the ball, some playmaking skills as well, which obviously they like, especially if they're going to be losing Plumlee at some point. So he's definitely out of the three. It's tough to say the most work in progress, but because of Bol Bol in here.
They're all major. Yeah. I mean, he's the one where there's probably the lowest expectations.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and note he only played 14 games in college, didn't start any of them, only played 17 minutes a game. Actually, I just realized we didn't talk about Jeremy Grant in terms of just going over how he'll look on this team next year and how he fits with the core. Do you want to just maybe give like a 20 to 30 second overview of what you think Jeremy Grant adds to the team?
Yeah, as quick as possible. I think you look at what Kenneth Faried did alongside Jokic as an ability to play in the dunker spot, come in, catch lobs. He can do that, but he's also going to space the floor and be a much better defender than Faried was. So this is huge for the Nuggets, I think. It's really, you know, it'll probably be a debate at times whether he should be starting over Millsap. I don't think he ever will, and I don't think he needs to, but I think he's going to be extremely effective, especially playing with Jokic.
Yeah. I think there's a very real chance it's either going to be he or Malik Beasley that's getting the most minutes off the bench. I'd probably lean Grant at this point, but I mean, we'll see. So next guy on the wild cards list, draft pick out of this year, 2019 draft, the 44th overall pick, Bol Bol.
Was the sixth
overall recruit in his high school class, played high school ball in Nevada, played at Oregon, where he had 9 games that he played before. I believe it was a navicular fracture. Does that sound right?
I'll trust you on that one.
I was going to say, that's one I should have probably looked up. But it's certainly a severe injury, not just in terms of for that season, but something that could be an issue going forward long term for a guy that is 7'2", which 7'2" with like a 7'7" wingspan, just incredible size. He's only 19. He'll be 20 in November. So I'll go over his college stats. So 9 games, as I said, scored 21 a game in 30 minutes. 9.6 rebounds. So I guess he had 24 blocks, so about almost 3 a game, as well as 2 turnovers a game. But I think it was very clear watching him in college. I believe it was Iowa was the game where he was just completely and utterly exposed on the defensive end.
Yep. I have that note here.
Really? Yeah. It was just very, it was really tough to see him.
It wasn't even defensively. Offensively, he was a lot worse too.
I was going to talk about the defense. But on the offensive end as well, it's difficult to see that, especially going up against a team that's not necessarily loaded with NBA athletes. It's one thing if NBA level point guards are burning Bol Bol, but if the 45th best point guard in the league is burning him consistently, that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah, and I think when he was pressured a lot, you know, talking on the offensive end, he settled a lot for tough shots because he's really underdeveloped as a passer, and he just doesn't have that vision to, you know, get out of those tough situations. His physicality and competitive mentality will need to improve, I think, for him not to be that liability that you talk about defensively. And then finishing possessions with rebounds, that's going to be key for him to stay on the floor at all. And we've talked about Denver still trying to figure out what to do in terms of where he's going to be, two-way or last roster spot. I don't think he plays much either way unless he really figures it out. They really, I think, would like to have him develop in the G League a little bit and see if there is that potential where I mean, he could be a top 10 player in the class easily if he really commits and to that physicality and right. to proving, you know, those weaknesses in his game. And
Yeah. I think a big thing you hit on is his really poor passing vision. I think it's going to take so much skill development for him to get at the point where he is a focal point of your offense. And it sounded to me in the sort of pre-draft evaluation that a lot of guys saw him more as, you know, a guy that could become an offensive superstar. A little confused. So he's obviously a great volume three-point shooter. That could be just a game-breaking skill. Yeah. But in terms of him being a guy that's like the lead of your offense and creating anything for other players, that's not something he ever showed. And I'm not really sure that it's something that's fair to project.
No, I think if he can be at all like Brooke Lopez in the sense, you know, as a three-point shooter, like that would be great for him.
Right.
But there were too many times, like you said, where he just gets in a bad situation and just wasn't able to really create for others. And hopefully he's got the perfect mentors in Jokic and Plumlee for that. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. I think this is a phenomenal situation for him. And if he was to pan out like the prospect he was considered in high school, I think that's certainly where it'll happen. But I think I just think it's important to note that the three-point shooting is his only real offensive skill, NBA skill. Obviously, he's got a little bit of handling and his shots, you know, he can like kind of create his own shot, but it's the three-point shooting that is what's getting him drafted.
I like his DHO potential, which could work in Denver too.
Yeah, that's something that, right, that's another fit thing that's not as useful on other teams, but in Denver, immensely useful. Just to note, attempted 2.8 threes in his 9 games last year, 52% of them he hit, and he also hit 76% of his free throws on 4.1 a game, so that's not a fluke. So 52% was a little bit high, but he's clearly a guy that has a lot of shooting touch.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move on to the last guy on this list. And I would say probably the most intriguing of any of the... So I don't know if that's fair to say. By far the biggest mystery of any of these guys.
Yeah.
That is Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. was a guy that I believe was he... Yeah, he was the number two recruited guy in 2017. That must have been behind Marvin Bagley. Yeah, so that was behind Marvin Bagley. Ended up not playing the season at Missouri due to injury concerns with his back. And ended up getting selected 14th overall. Was not really expected to play last year, and ended up obviously redshirting the entire season after he had that back surgery prior to the draft. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
And it also worth noting, he was supposed to play summer league this year, but ended up suffering, was it knee problems or foot problems?
It was just an ankle. Was it a knee or an ankle? It was a knee sprain.
Knee sprain. Okay. Yeah. So not necessarily something severe, but just another in a line of injuries. I forgot. So his senior year in high school, which a lot of his hype obviously was generated that year. He was a great prospect before, but he scored like 35 points a game his senior year at Nathan Hale in Seattle, which was an interesting year because that was the year that Brandon Roy recruited Michael Porter Jr. and like 6 or 7 other high caliber recruits to that school and just won them a title and then went and coached for his alma mater the year after. So it's kind of like the Toronto Raptors of high school basketball. really interesting team, actually, to sort of think about. I mean, so I'd say Michael Porter Jr. maybe has a little bit of that Brandon Roy in him where he's just so Michael Porter Jr. is a shot creator. That's what he does. He can make his own shot. So I think his handle is good. I've heard a couple of people that sound more doubtful on it, but I think the general consensus is like he's got a good handle. His movements are smooth with the ball. He's very upright with the way he moves, but he's a good overall athlete, good leaper, pretty quick. And the most important thing, he's like 6'10", maybe 6'11" at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just able to shoot over everybody.
And I think that's the thing about both him and Bol Bol that the Nuggets like is their ability to shoot over their position. If they both can develop in that way, then that's something that can really be used, you know, to their advantage. Like you said, his handle, I'm with you. I've heard that, you know, creating space might be more of a concern than creating his own shot. Like, he likes to shoot over people with that length, and just he can get his handle into the shot, but maybe not get great open shots. So we'll see that in action pretty soon here. The preseason, they play Portland to open up. So we'll see if he can. We'll see what he shows there if they're playing him. From all I've heard, he should be playing.
Okay. Yeah. It's one thing that has been pretty interesting is it seems like the general consensus around the Nuggets organization and fan base is that ideally Michael Porter Jr. is a three. Do you see his long-term position being the three? Do you see him as more of, I would say he's probably someone I would project to be a four just because I have concerns about his defense, but I think, you know, it's certainly possible he could play some 3 minutes. I guess, especially against a team like Portland, you could certainly play Michael Porter three for 30 minutes.
Yes. I
mean, because then you don't have to worry about the defensive matchup at the three, but it's such a crazy matchup on the offensive end to have Michael Porter Jr. at the three. Can you just, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think at least for now, they do see him as a three, especially, you know, if Jeremy Grant comes in, you know, I guess you could play either of them at either position deep into the future. But I'm with you. I would kind of like to see him as a four probably until we see what his handle can be. And, you know, how he plays defensively is a big thing for them. So yeah, it's all up in the air right now with him. I think he was getting a lot of hype, you know, going into the summer league, and then it kind of took another dip, and it's a wave of hype for him for sure. Especially all these, you know, workout videos getting posted, you know, oh, doing dunk, and it's like, okay, well, we'll see what happens on the court.
The worst thing is
to say, oh, the Nuggets are going to be successful because of Michael Porter. Like, he's icing on the cake for them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They need to focus on the other pieces. And, you know, if he becomes, you know, what all the hype is from his teammates and coaches and fans and media, if he becomes that, then, like I said, it's icing on the cake. They probably have a really good shot to win the championship. But there's no reason to count on that at this point.
Yeah. And that kind of harkens back to what we said earlier about how, you know, nobody's going to be given minutes on this team. It's going to be earned. So obviously, that's a really good situation for Denver to be in, to not have to rely on a guy that you took with the 14th overall pick. But I guess you could think of it either way in terms of how that could affect Michael Porter's career. So you could say, on one hand, at least he's not getting the Josh Jackson where he's thrown out into a team of, you know, hot steaming garbage and asked to create buckets that he can't do. And then he's, you know, forms bad habits, isn't reinforced to do the right things. Obviously, Josh Jackson had some problems off the court that Michael Porter Jr. does not. But I think, you know,
now posting the commissioner's contact information on social media.
Wait, what?
He had a Snapchat story that had Adam Silver's email and phone number.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's more funny than dang. Oh, that troublemaker.
The best part was the caption he had was like, "When's lunch?" or something like that.
Oh my God. Like, that's hilarious.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Yeah, but
definitely Adam Silver was probably called him in and was like, "You know what? this is not what we're looking for."
Michael Porter Jr. is just, I mean, just such an enigma. Where he goes. So I guess to finish up what I was saying is, so it's good that the Nuggets are going to be able to put him in a role that fits him and allows him to, or keeps him from having to overcreate and get to the point where he's just seen as, you know, an inefficient shot chucker and isn't developing his skills. But on the other hand, he's only going to be given, you know, a very limited number of chances. And if he isn't succeeding, you know, I'm sure they'll keep trying to develop him. but it's not going to be forever.
I mean, Craig, I mean, he could score 22 any game, so.
5 for 7 from three. I mean, how many games have you seen Michael Porter Jr. go 5 for 7 from three into the NBA?
Zero.
That's facts.
I agree with that. It's very similar to Isaiah Thomas in that the Nuggets are a team that needs to win and win early, especially with the schedule they've been given. Luckily, I guess you could look at it that way, as the early season schedule maybe will give them an opportunity to have more minutes for him built in, because it's not a lot of back-to-backs. It's not extremely difficult. So he'll have his opportunities early, and he will need to take advantage of them if he wants to stay in the rotation, at least on a meaningful level going forward.
That's reasonable. So I think we can pretty much wrap it up here. We've gone through all the guys. We've gone about almost an hour 20, so not as bad as most of them, though. You know, we're cutting it pretty short. We're going to be under an hour and a half as long as I don't ramble too long. So, you know, I think a really interesting way to sort of sum this up would be, let's try to fit these guys into the rotation next year and just kind of put an estimate on how many minutes they're going to play. So obviously Jokic, he's their best player.
Yeah.
He's going to get as many minutes as you can play him. But I guess starting with Jamal Murray, not really a question either. You're playing him as much as you can. Probably, you know, 34 minutes, right?
Probably.
Yeah. Let's start with Gary Harris. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different working him in, but you see him as still the number three option in that offense?
Yeah, as long as he's healthy, he'll be the number three. Malik is great and might be, you know, eating some of those minutes, but that'll be a consistency thing with him. And at least what you get with Gary is consistency. So most of the time when healthy.
Right. Yeah. I think you could certainly see him more at, you know, the 28 to 30 minute range, depending on how much Malik does come in.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, let's move on next to Malik Beasley. What do you predict this season looking like? How many minutes do you think he'll average? And then we can talk about what sort of contract do you think he'll get next offseason?
Don't
want to think about that yet.
that's gonna be an issue. I mean, if you think about it, just with in terms of all the contracts kind of aligning, like, this might be the last season of having, like, and we had an hour and 20 minutes just talking about the young core of the Nuggets, like,
yep,
might be the last year that they have all these young pieces, depending on how things go, how much we don't know if they want to go over the luxury tax at all. I mean, they should, but we don't know that they will. So is Malik Beasley going to be outpriced? It's possible. I mean, he's good enough that some teams will probably throw starter numbers at him.
Yep.
And it'll be up to Denver to decide, and Malik to decide as well.
How much of a breakout season do you expect from him? Do you think it'll be like 20 minutes a game, or do you think he's going to be forcing the Nuggets to play him more 26, 27 minutes a game?
I think he'll be right around where he was last year, still at 23. I can't see him getting too much above that, because I do think Gary Harris is going to play well. But I also don't see him getting too much below that, because I think Beasley's going to play well. So it is going to be an interesting dynamic. I mean, the more Beasley can show to play himself at the three, I think he could eat into Will Barton's minutes, depending on how Barton plays coming back. I mean, he wasn't the same after his injury, which was much more serious, and who knows if he will get back to it, whereas I think Gary Harris will get back to his old form.
Right.
So I think Malik Beasley will have a pretty similar season to last year. I mean, you said, I mean, how well he shot, like, it's hard to keep that up and improve on that without, you know, immense starting opportunities. So
very true, very true. I think that's a good point, that the it's more important to note whether he continues those efficiency numbers as opposed to up in that usage. And I think Monte Morris, pretty much the same applies to him.
Yeah.
Outside of sliding down to the three, obviously. But in terms of, you know, he's a backup to a much more established player. He's, you know, it's going to be really hard for him to exceed his role from last year, but probably maintains the same level of production. Do you see anything changing with him?
No, I think he'll be more of the same as well. Again, with Gary Harris being more consistent, like, I just think there's less opportunity for Morris and Beasley to play alongside, you know, the starters as much as they did last year.
Right. And then, so Jeremy Grant, we talked about him very briefly. Probably you think he's the third big behind Mason, ahead of Mason Plumlee. Do you think he plays
more than Plumlee? I think he's ahead of Plumlee. Yeah. I think Millsap's minutes will actually take a dip this year. Just with his age and trying to keep him fresh as well, he may start, but I think Jeremy Grant may have more minutes and may even finish in certain games. So that'll be an interesting dynamic to follow between them. They'll probably have pretty close to the same amount of minutes splitting that power forward spot. That leaves for a guy like Wancho to kind of transition to him, I don't know. He probably has to show that he can play at the three to get a lot of minutes.
Which there's certainly the opportunity. Obviously, Torrey Craig is there. Obviously, Will Barton's there. But there's no natural starting three on that team. Not that I would expect Wancho to prove himself as the starting three, but that just makes it a lot easier to carve out a 10, 15-minute rotation role at that position. Was there anything else you wanted to say on Wancho?
No, nothing.
And then as far as the young guys, obviously Vanderbilt, Bull Bull, very unlikely they play at all. This season, you more than likely want to see them excel in the G League. Michael Porter Jr., though, just give me maybe your optimistic outlook on what he'll look like this season. Not his 99th percent outcome, but give me his 70th percentile outcome this year.
Well, I think if he can challenge Will Barton for the starting spot at times, I think that'll be good. I don't know that Will Barton gives it up if he is able to play healthy. I think Barton is probably the person they want starting for this team most of the year, including the playoffs. But I think, you know, being able to be a scorer off the bench, just efficiency will be his thing also. Like the thing that having this depth and having the playmaking of the bigs around you allows you to do and what they want you to do on the Nuggets is be an efficient shooter, efficient scorer. So the worst case scenario for him is that he comes in and tries to do it all himself and tries to earn his starting spot as fast as possible. I think as long as he's content with the process and being efficient first, I think that'll really help him. You know, if he can be, you know, around a 10-point scorer, you know, I think take some of the scoring pressure off of Monte, allow Monte to create more. That'll help a lot. And, you know, just fitting in on the bench, I think, will be big for him.
Yeah. I mean, I think you pretty much covered it there. I don't really have anything else to say at all. So let's cap it out. How about I did this with Lance. Give me like a 1-minute rundown on what you expect from the Denver Nuggets next season.
My expectation is that they get the one seed. I think they're a team that has shown that they care enough about the regular season that they're able to go out and get it done. Whereas I think some of the better teams like the Clippers, who they might lose to in the playoffs, I think they will have enough load management and other resting components to their regular season that, you know, doesn't allow them to get up to the one seed. So I do think Denver will be in that position. What that means for their playoff rest and preparedness, I think they'll be fine. They'll be more prepared than last year and hopefully well rested enough because of the depth. But I still don't think they have, barring a trade, I don't think they have what it takes to make it past the Western Conference Finals or even the second round, depending on the matchup.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable look at it. Certainly not a homer look. I think you could even find people that are more optimistic on their title hopes for next season. But I think
there's a possibility. I don't think that. I mean, unless Michael Porter and, you know, becomes the starter, and unless Jamal Murray actually gets, you know, that all-star nod, like he becomes an all-star. If those two things happen, I think they can beat the Clippers or anyone else. But there's just enough things that, at least right now, that they've struggled with, especially in playoff series, that I think they just need more time still and more experiences. And home court will help them for sure. But I just think there are certain ways that, you know, they're not quite ready. This last year, they had the perfect scenario in order to get to the championship, and they went to seven games both times. Yeah. So they're just, that's part of being a young team, is they need more time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I think your point about home court is a really good one. Yeah. And overall, it's just clearly this is a very, not just, you know, it's not that they're a super young team, but they're just young across the board.
Yeah.
And young at the biggest positions, not biggest in terms of largest, but most important positions. So yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's a team that it's hard to predict for next season, because you're trying to predict how six or seven different guys are going to pan out. Yeah, I'm a team that'll be very exciting next year. Obviously one of the most fun teams to watch.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see how all these guys pan out. Can't wait to see if Jokic is able to really enter the MVP conversation next year.
I do think Jokic will win the MVP this year. I do.
Wow.
Think
that'll happen. Okay. There you go. There's a good homer take.
Yes.
That's a good homer take. I like that one. I'm glad you got at least one in.
Yes, I had to do it.
Yeah. After Lance spent half an hour talking about Kevon Looney, we needed at least one homer take. Oh, God. All right. This was awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks
talking,
for having me.
Talking great. Nuggets hoops. Is there anything you want to, like, plug?
You know, for now, I think just to keep an eye on my Twitter.
Yeah.
I'll start to be getting back into that, especially as
what's your
comes around. It's at PArsenault19, and the last name Arsenault is spelled ArsenAult. So just follow me on there. I'll have, you know, a website hooked up for some scouting things throughout the year, scouting college prospects, and also be keeping up with the Nuggets and Jokic's MVP campaign.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait to see it. It was a pleasure to talk to you, man. I'll let you go now, but yeah, I had a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me again.
Of course, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.